Welcome to Whiskey Cast, the Cask Strength podcast featuring news and interviews from the world of whiskey. I'm Mark Gillespie. This is episode number 268 for July 4th, 2010. Coming up in a few minutes.
Hip hip, huzzah! Hip hip, huzzah! Hip hip, huzzah to your health! Gentlemen, lady.
That's the cheering at Mount Vernon as George Washington's rye whiskey went on sale Thursday with actor Dean Melissa in the role of President Washington. More from Mount Vernon in a few minutes, but first let's look at the news brought to you by Glenmorangie. Knapog Castle Irish Whiskey has been sold with a vintage designation for years. Earlier this year, Castle Brands introduced a 15-year-old version of its flagship Irish whiskey and is now releasing a 12-year-old version. Castle Brands chairman Mark Andrews, whose father bottled the first Knapog Castle whiskey distilled back in 1951, says the move was made because some consumers didn't realize how long the whiskey was being aged. The 12 will be available starting this month, and vintage designations will be used only for special releases of Knapog Castle from now on. That's just part of a big discussion over age statements within the whiskey world this week, thanks to a new campaign being launched by Chivas Brothers. Chivas's The Age Matters campaign will be used across all of its whiskey brands. It's based on a survey last month of whiskey buyers in 8 major markets around the world. Not surprisingly, the study found that age statements matter, but Neil McDonald of Chivas Brothers told me that many people in the survey didn't know what age statements really mean.
We were certainly slightly surprised at the degree to which age was important. I mean, it roughly was about 9 out of 10 consumers said that age was a very important factor in helping inform and make their choice when coming to purchasing whiskey. But we expected that would probably be quite high anyway. What did surprise us was the lack of knowledge as to what an age statement really means on a whiskey label. Now, you know, the age has to be the youngest age of the whiskey contained in the blend or the single malt in that bottle, and only 1 in 10 actually could describe that correctly. Most thought it was the average age of the whiskey, and thereafter they thought it was the highest age of the whiskey. So given the importance of age statements, it was certainly quite surprising to see just how little awareness there was of what it really means.
Now, one of the other findings in this study was that people generally thought older whiskeys were better, right?
They did indeed, yes. They thought that generally there was a correlation between quality and age, and that obviously generally tends to express itself through the fact that older whiskies are more expensive to produce. They tend to be more precious, rarer. There's less of them. It takes, you know, significant effort to nurture a whiskey and nurse it through into a strong age statement as such. So it's something that is worth paying more for. So generally, yes, there was a general correlation that older was better in that respect.
Allow me to play devil's advocate for a moment, because you know as well as I do that most whiskeys have a sweet spot that they reach anywhere between 15 and 18 years, and that not all older whiskeys are necessarily better than, say, 12 to 15 to 18-year-olds because of the wood effect, right?
Absolutely. I mean, given what we're assuming is that the, if you like, the wood management and the way the maturation has been managed has been done, you know, to the best of the abilities, because you're quite right. Sometimes you can come across older whiskies which are frankly tannic, woody, quite bitter because, you know, they frankly have been overaged. So obviously the skill with higher aged whiskey, you know, age statements, let's say going up past 18 years of age, is to actually have the right cask selection so that you're still retaining some of that distillery character, but allowing the further complexity to develop, you know, over that period of time.
Now, explain what you guys are going to do with this survey in terms of the campaign to actually teach people about age statements.
Well, we believe this is a, you know, this is a long-term campaign. A, we think as a company and is expressed through our brands that age statements is a key piece of information that allows, you know, our whiskey drinkers, our whiskey consumers around the world to inform their choice. So we want this to be an ongoing campaign where we want to educate, bring people's awareness up of what age statements really mean. So it's not just a one-hit wonder. We don't want to do this just over the next 3 or 4 weeks. It's a campaign we want to integrate across our brand activity And to work indeed on its own right. So it will be kicking off within duty-free activity on one of our brands, Ballantine's, actually in the beginning of July. But you should expect to see it pop up with some regularity across certainly Shivers Brothers activity, you know, at least over the next year or so.
This also helps other whiskey makers as well, though, because it's not just, while it is a Shivers Brothers campaign, it also helps those other whiskey makers that use a lot of age statements.
Absolutely. We deliberately try to keep it, you know, open. We don't want to just talk about Shivers Brothers brands because we believe this is important for the category itself. Scotch whiskey has been built on the importance of age statements. It's a founding sort of principle of how Scotch whiskey has built its popularity around the world, and it allows people to see how they can trade up and what's worth paying the price for. And in fact, you know, we have failed to really get across the importance and significance of what age means. You know, maturing a whiskey for 21 years is a significant achievement. You know, what we're bottling now into Royal Salute was distilled back in 1989. So the, you know, it's something that we think is really important for the category, and obviously for our own brands as well. And delighted that, you know, if the industry was to look at this and benefit as a whole.
Again, allow me to play devil's advocate for a second here. Would it have possibly been more effective for the industry-wide benefit to have just spent money on the campaign that perhaps showed off more of the new Scotch whiskey law regulations and what these terms actually mean than just discussing age statements?
Well, we tend to act on what we can do with our own brands, if you like, and I know the recent regulations cover an awful lot of other different areas. So, you know, not surprisingly, as I said earlier, we have a portfolio of brands like Shivers Regal, Ballantine's, Royal Salute, the Glenlivet, Avila, all which have ranges of whiskey ranges based on strong age statement sort of differentiation. So I think it's an area where we can bring value through our campaign. This is something that we can bring to market, that we can help to make consumers aware of. So we're really looking to accentuate where we can make a difference within the campaign, where our expertise and indeed where our passion lies for how we make our whiskey.
Anything else you can add I didn't ask about?
No, I think all we'd say is that you know, we would like to see a good debate about the relevance and importance of age statements. We appreciate there are probably a number of different points of view out there at the moment. It's something that's not necessarily being talked about a huge amount. We have a strong point of view. We want to stand up and you know, stick a pole on the ground and say we do actually believe that the age matters. And we hope that other people will chime in with their points of view, and we appreciate that everyone has their own angle, their own perspective, their own likes and dislikes. So long may the debate continue, and let's appreciate what age stands for with us.
Now, I said in my conversation with Neil that age matters up to a point, but Serge Valentin of the Malt Maniacs followed up on the Shivas study with some research of his own. He went through the ratings from all of the Malt Maniacs competitions since 2002, with more than 10,000 different scores for 865 different whiskies. About 86% of those whiskies carried age statements, and whiskies aged between 35 and 39 years old received an average score of 88. Whiskies between 11 and 13 years old averaged 82.7. I've posted a link to Serge's research at the Malt Maniacs website, so you can look at the details in more detail. Meanwhile, it's not just age statements that make a difference. Sometimes the bottle design does, too. And Shivas has announced a repackaging for its Aberlour single malts. The move affects the 12, 16, and Abunad versions, which will all get consistent bottle designs and labeling worldwide. Diageo has millions of barrels of whiskey in its warehouses and now plans to use some of that whiskey to plug a hole in its UK pension plan. The world's largest distiller will transfer ownership of between 2 and 2.5 million barrels of whiskey to the pension plan, along with nearly $300 million in cash. The Wall Street Journal reported the move this week, and the pensioners won't benefit from the desire for older whiskeys these days. Turns out the barrels are all filled with spirit less than 3 years old that can't be bottled as whiskey yet. And as barrels reach 3 years of age, Diageo will reclaim them and replace them with more young barrels. Diageo will buy back the entire stock 15 years from now for a guaranteed maximum price of around $654 million. During the Brook Laddie episode of the Faygeal series in May, I mentioned the distillery's release of a malt produced entirely with barley grown on Isla. It's moves like that that earned the distillery an award from the Scottish Farmer for Environmental Awareness. The award was officially for Brook Laddie's organic single malt using all Scottish barley. Finally, the winners have been announced in this year's Los Angeles International Wine and Spirits Awards. Buffalo Trace took home gold medals for Pappy Van Winkle's Family Reserve 15-year-old bourbon, Eagle Rare 10-year-old bourbon, George T. Stagg bourbon, and Sazerac Straight Rye Whiskey. Old Pulteney won gold medals for its 17- and 21-year-old expressions. Glenmorangie won golds for its Nectar d'Or Sauternes cask and Sonalta PX single malts. And William Grant & Sons won for the Balvenie Portwood, Glenfiddich 21-year-old, and Grant's Family Reserve blend. I've posted a link to the complete list of medal winners at the WhiskeyCast website. And that's the news brought to you by Glenmorangie, handcrafted by the 16 men of Tain since 1843. Time to announce a couple of winners. First off, Ron Nash is the winner of the June book competition for subscribers to the WhiskeyCast email newsletter. Ron will receive a copy of Chef Albert Schmid's The Kentucky Bourbon Cookbook from the University Press of Kentucky. And last but not least, the winner of a bottle of the Glenlivet Founders Reserve 1824 is Peter Anderson of Stockholm, Sweden. His entry was selected at random, and the folks at the Glenlivet will be arranging to send the bottle to Peter. Congratulations to both. I'll have another competition coming up soon. Let's check the emails of the week now, brought to you by Highland Park. John Richardson of North Carolina emailed me about the interview with Dave Pickerel of Whistle Pig Rye in the last episode, and John has a clarification on the origin of Whistle Pig. Let's listen to Dave's explanation again.
My partner, Raj, was out hiking in the vale, and he's walking along the mountains, and here comes this French guy with long, flowing gray hair, pedaling a bicycle head fast down the hill. He's just going 90 miles an hour, and all of a sudden he slides to a stop, and he looks at Raj, and he looks over his shoulder and says, could it be a whistle pig? And Raj looks at him like, what are you talking about? And the guy goes, it was a pig. Could it be a whistle pig? And Raj goes, I don't understand what you're talking about. And the guy goes, you know, a whistle pig. And he puts his hand to his mouth and goes, and Raj goes, I don't understand. And the guy goes, and jumps back on his bike and takes off down the mountain. And so Raj goes, this is so strange. I have got to do something with this.
Now here's what John had to say. I enjoyed your interview with Dave Pickerel of Whistle Pig Rye. In case you didn't know, whistle pig is also a slang name for a groundhog or woodchuck. The Frenchman on the bike may have confused a marmot with the groundhog, as they appear very similar in appearance. Now, if I can only get Whistle Pig Rye at North Carolina's state-owned ABC stores. Thanks for the explanation, John. By the way, I'll have tasting notes for Whistle Pig Rye in a few minutes. If you have a question or a suggestion, my email address is comments@whiskeycast.com. And the emails of the week are brought to you by Highland Park. Click the banner at the WhiskeyCast website to join Highland Park's inner circle. Let's check the calendar of events brought to you by Laphroaig. The Brandy Library in New York City will hold a tasting of precious and rare bourbons on July 10th. Tales of the Cocktail runs from July 15th through the 21st in New Orleans. The Australian Malt Whiskey Tasting Championship is July 17th in Sydney. Richard Patterson of the Dalmore will be at Federal Wine and Spirits in Boston July 20th. Fred Noe of Jim Beam will lead a whiskey tasting at the Bradford House Whiskey Rebellion Dinner in Washington, Pennsylvania, July 30th. McTears will hold its next auction of rare whiskeys in Edinburgh on August 18th, right after Whiskey Fringe August 14th and 15th. And the Whiskey Guild's next tasting and dinner cruise will be in New York City on August 26th. You'll find a complete calendar of events at the WhiskeyCast website, and it's brought to you by Laphroaig. Just click the Laphroaig banner at the WhiskeyCast website to become a friend of Laphroaig and claim your own square foot of Isla. Back in the day, whiskey drinkers would take their jugs to George Washington's distillery at Mount Vernon to fill them up almost right off the still. This week, for the first time since the original distillery burned down in 1814, whiskey drinkers lined up to buy some of the first president's rye whiskey. No jugs, though. Just 471 375-milliliter bottles that didn't last very long. They went on sale following a short ceremony.
You know, it's a long-standing tradition to actually become elected through serving liquor to your constituents. In fact, General Washington lost his first election because he was a little too frugal with the liquor. And when he upped the amount of liquor per constituent, he easily won his second election. So now it is a pleasure to introduce someone who absolutely needs no introduction, the one and the only, President George Washington.
Well, you all may be here to enjoy yourself, but I have to get to work. I will tell you that it is a bit early in the day for me to imbibe. However, a distiller's work is never done. And so I will, before you have an opportunity to taste it, I will make sure it is fine and good for you and all of our guests, if you will allow me. Perfect, Mr. Bayshore. Perfect, sir. And well done. Now, I know you have all been waiting. You have probably developed a thirst amongst yourselves. I want to lead a toast, and I want to ask these good people to charge their glasses. When we have completed the toast, I want you to join me in our 18th century tradition with three hearty huzzas when I call out the cheer. Now, the appropriate toast. You know, in my day, for example, during the War of American Independence, there were a wide variety of toasts, things such as King George rejected, liberty protected. If you had a few in your stomach already, you might raise your glass and say, eternal itching with no scratching to America's enemies. However, here at Mount Vernon, we simply raise our glasses and drink to our friends. And so I drink to your health, to our friends, and to the safe, responsible, and orderly imbibement of Mount Vernon whiskies. Hip hip, huzzah! Hip hip, huzzah! Hip hip, huzzah! To your health. Gentlemen, lady. Mr. Reese was swallowing hard, and then his first words were smooth. Welcome to Virginia Whiskey, sir.
If you want to know more about the restoration of the distillery, check the archives at the WhiskeyCast website for episode 108 from December of 2007, when Dennis Pogue walked us through Washington's history as a distiller. Dennis has overseen the entire restoration project for nearly 10 years, and he was like a proud father at Thursday's ceremony.
This is the day you've been waiting for years now, right?
Well, it is a great day. You know, the project's been going on a long time, and we've had a lot of good days when we opened the distillery and saw people come in and enjoy it for the first time. You know, that was terrific. But this is really in response to, you know, visitors' interests. We've been getting the question, when are you going to have product for us to buy and taste ever since we opened the distillery? So it's been 3 years, and so it's nice to be able to respond to that.
Now, let's explain what happened with these with the whiskey that was made 3 years ago. This is not technically aged in barrels that's being sold now, right?
Well, that's correct. We distilled 3 years ago, and then we got Dave Pickerel back in February of 2009 to make 100 gallons. And always before, we'd made very small amounts that really weren't available to anybody. So this was with the idea that we'd have enough that we could sell it. And so we made it in 2009, and what we're selling today is the unaged spirit. So this is as close to George Washington's whiskey as you're going to find anywhere.
So this is a little over a year old then, right?
Exactly. But again, it's not been aging in barrels. It's been in inert containers. So, you know, it really hasn't changed.
What happened to the whiskey that was done 3 years ago?
Well, actually, we already have auctioned that off as a fundraiser. And that's what we've been doing with the very small amounts that we've been making over the years, is that the Discus folks have been doing auctions for us and fundraising events. And so that's where that product has gone. So that's why this is really different, because this is available to the general public. And that's why we're so happy to be able to do it.
I understand also that you've got some that was put into barrels that's going to be used at some point in the future, right?
Well, that's correct. We made 100 gallons in 2009. 50 of it is going on sale today. The other half has been sitting in charred oak barrels against the future. Again, knowing that that's not how Washington did it. But again, we thought that at some point down the road that there would be interest in tasting Washington's recipe with additional aging. And so we don't have a timeline on that yet. We're going to figure out when we think it's going to be at its peak, and then we'll make that available as well.
You having fun with this still?
Well, it's great. And, you know, the fun part is people's interest, is that there's something about George Washington and this product, this process. I think it's because it's outside of people's expectation of George Washington. And so for us, it's a great opportunity to tell a story in an interesting way that most people don't know.
I know that when I was growing up in school, and you and I have had this discussion before, nobody ever mentioned that Washington had a life after he left the presidency. We're taught that he just came back to Mount Vernon and retired, but that really isn't the case, is it?
Well, it's not the case. And, we teach history in a very simplified way in this country, I think. And Washington has taken on a certain persona, and that we've sort of put him in a niche of what we want people to learn about him. And of course, there was so much that was so important that, you know, we can't fault that. But there's the rest of the story, as you say, and that this is part of the rest of the story.
Thursday also marked another first, the first legal spirits tasting in Virginia since Prohibition, under a new state law that took effect that day. Jimmy Rogers got the first bottle from the gift shop.
Now, I'm the chairman of Associated Distributors of Charmer Sunbelt Group in Virginia, the distilled spirits business, and we believe in this. This is a good day.
How much effort went into actually producing this? Because I know the wholesalers were involved. I know the legislators, the ABC board, there had to be a lot of effort put together on a lot of parts to make this happen.
I think it's two things, with us being on the wholesale side, but I think it started on the distilling side. The distilling side, as you heard, it's been a 3-4 year process in the master distiller, et cetera, on the wholesalers supporting Mount Vernon, but the legislative effort with Discus just going to our legislative, that if consumers come in ABC stores, responsibility, an opportunity to taste products for their libations.
And with the debut of public tastings, what's this going to do for the business in the state of Virginia, in the Commonwealth?
I just think it continues to make another statement by ABC being consumer-friendly, customer satisfaction. And I know us, so we're employing somewhere between 15 to 25 people to support the tastings in the stores. And I think our competition is going to do the same. And so in today's economic development problems, that's a good thing.
What are you going to do with this bottle?
I'm going to take it home and frame it and might sip it over the 4th.
Not everyone got to take home a bottle, but everyone got to taste the whiskey, including Mark and Kristen Schaefer.
This is very medicinal. I'm trying to think of what this. This is very herbaceous. Wow.
It's fresh smelling.
A little bit of anise in it, maybe.
There's something I can't quite put my finger on in it.
It's totally different than I expected. I expected it to be a yellow rye and aged in oak. And obviously, it hasn't been.
Indescribable for me.
It tastes totally different than what it smells like. In fact, it tastes very good. It's a little bit sweet. I mean, it's very pleasant. It's very smooth, and it goes down easy. And
have you ever tried spirit off straight off the still before?
I have not. This is the first time. Yeah.
So you gonna try some now?
I did.
What did you think of the white stuff?
I liked it. I was expecting a more traditional rye whiskey flavor, so it surprised me. The color surprised me, and the flavor was also different. You know, I maybe like grappa. Have you ever had grappa? It was the same kind of experience, a little fire water, you know? But I did like it very much. I look forward to trying it again.
So you each bought a bottle?
Yes, sir. We did. We had
this on the list for 2 years, so we're...
This was our last chance. We're moving out of the country.
Now, and we leave tonight, so this is perfect timing.
The Schaefers each bought a bottle to take with them to their new home in Columbia, and all 471 bottles sold out pretty much immediately. As I'm recording this, none have turned up on eBay so far. Let's start off the What I'm Tasting This Week department with this unique whiskey. It was bottled at 43% ABV, and like most New Make or White Dog Spirit, it's clear. The nose is clean, light, and fruity with a hint of pears, but the taste has some kick to it. It's sharp and tart with lemon and pear notes, and not as much rye influence as I had expected to find. The finish is tart and clean. I'd like to try this after some time in a barrel. It's an interesting and unusual whiskey, and I'm scoring it an 84. I mentioned Whistlepig Rye a few minutes ago and received a sample of it this week. It's 100% rye, distilled in Canada, and bottled at 50% ABV. The nose has a lot of rye bread toast, along with honey, oak, cinnamon, and vanilla. The taste starts off with spicy rye and sweet maple syrup notes at first, then shows a hint of honey as the rye fades, the mouthfeel is excellent, and the finish has a hint of almonds with a lingering rye note and just a touch of maple. I'm giving the Whistlepig Rye a score of 93. And since it's the Independence Day weekend in the U.S., I'll close things out with the world's best-selling whiskey and an American icon, Jack Daniel's Black. I'll be honest with you, it's not usually one of my first choices when I'm picking a whiskey, after a couple of bad experiences with it back in college. These days it's bottled at 40% ABV, used to be a lot stronger back in the day, but the nose is still the classic vanilla, honey, and toasted oak from the charcoal filtering used in the Lincoln County process. The taste is spicy with chili pepper and balanced with hints of honey and vanilla. The finish stays spicy with a slight lemony tartness. It's simple and uncomplicated, exactly what Jack Daniel's is meant to be, and I'm scoring it an 85. Of course, you'll find all of my tasting notes in the WhiskeyCast iPhone app sponsored by the Glenrothes and at the WhiskeyCast website. That's also where you'll find links to my Twitter feed and the WhiskeyCast Facebook page, the calendar of events, the WhiskeyCast store powered by Amazon.com, and a complete archive of past episodes. The address is www.whiskeycast.com, and my email address is comments@whiskeycast.com. I love hearing from you. WhiskeyCast is a production of Cast Strength Media, copyright 2010, and comes to you from the charming, yet regrettably dry town of Haddonfield, New Jersey. I'm Mark Gillespie, reminding you that when you drink, please drink responsibly. Thanks for listening.